We're talking about who has the most lakes, Wisconsin or Minnesota. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And you know what? I'm just going to get out of the way here and bring on the number cruncher, the investigative reporter, to set the record as straight as it can be. Eric Litke is a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. Eric, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So you started looking into this rivalry over lakes because Wisconsin's tourism secretary, Sarah Meany, made this bold claim last month during an interview with WTMJ radio host John McCure. And let's listen to a part of that conversation.
Wisconsin, many people may not be aware, actually has 15,000 freshwater lakes.
More than Minnesota?
More than Minnesota.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. We win.
You can hear the conviction in their voices, the excitement. So why was the tourism secretary boasting about Wisconsin's lakes here?
Well, it starts out with a raw number, right? So you say, hey, Wisconsin, how many lakes do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And the Wisconsin DNR says 15,074 is the exact number. If you go to Minnesota's Department of Natural Resources, again, these are the folks that should know what they're talking about, right? They say they're the land of 10,000 lakes, but the actual tally is 11,842. So you go, okay, we've asked them both, Wisconsin wins. And that's pretty much what the tourism department did as well. But it's not nearly that simple because you've got to dive into the study of lakes and what exactly a lake is. And so that's where this one got a little more interesting and a lot nerdier.
All right. Well, let's bring on the nerdiness here. How does each state define lakes differently?
So Minnesota has an actual physical standard. It's a body of water has to be greater than 10 acres in order to qualify as a lake. So that's how it gets to that 11,000 plus number in its public waters inventory. Wisconsin, on the other hand, basically says, well, a lake is anything we feel like calling a lake. And the database of lakes from the Wisconsin DNR includes bodies of water as small as a tenth of an acre.
Huh. That's interesting. So why do they have two different calculations?
So this is something we checked in with the U.S. Geological Survey and some other kind of respected experts here, and ultimately there is just not a shared definition of what a lake is. The Geological Survey says there's 54 generic terms that have characteristics similar to a lake, as they call it. So we've got flowages and basins and ponds and reservoirs, and these are all kind of colloquial terms, but none of these really have a scientific definition of these size or these characteristics. So that kind of takes us back to the beginning, right? So we're figuring out, okay, how can we set some kind of similar standard and actually settle this once and for all? This was, ironically, a discussion point with my coworkers and I going back a little ways. So we thought this was a great opportunity to truly dive in and set the record straight.
We're talking with Eric Litke, a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin, about the tall claim that Wisconsin has more lakes than Minnesota. What questions do you have about counting lakes? Which state do you think has more lakes and why? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Eric, how do you set the standard here? What did you do?
So, checking in with the U.S. Geological Survey, they have something called the National Hydrography Dataset, where they're using satellite imagery and a consistent standard across the nation to identify bodies of water. So they don't specifically define lakes and ponds, but they have this combined grouping called lake-pond features. So that lets us get to some kind of a shared definition where we can hold up the same measuring stick to both Wisconsin and Minnesota, which ultimately was what this debate needed. And unfortunately for those of us on this side of the border, any fair standard leaves Wisconsin lacking. If you look at total lake pond features, Minnesota comes in with about 125,000, Wisconsin's at 82,000. If you use this national database and apply the 10-acre standard to both of them, the one that Minnesota uses generally, They put Minnesota's number at about 14,000, Wisconsin's around 6,000. And you can kind of go on down the list if you cut it off at 25 acres, if you only use lakes with names. Any of those end up showing that Minnesota's got about twice as many lakes as Wisconsin does.
All right. Well, I'm trying to furiously jot down numbers here, but what are lake pond features? Can you describe, you know, that those characteristics?
Yeah, it's basically a standing inland body of water. They don't define it much deeper than that. So anything that someone may glance at and kind of think that's a lake, someone else may say that's a big pond. But anything that's kind of in that continuum kind of gets grouped into that for the U.S. Geological Survey.
I'm wondering why Wisconsin could be so off in its count and Minnesota could be so off in on its own license plate. I mean, these are the license plate driving all over the place, right?
So the difference between the 14,000 number that they have and Minnesota's cutoff is likely just because of different times of year. There's a lot of lakes that are going to kind of ebb and flow seasonally. So part of it depends on when you grab that satellite imagery.
So this 10-acre standard, you know, that 10 acres of lake could shrink during parts of the year. And certainly we see flooding, you know, a lake can really expand.
Certainly.
Yeah. So this type of data is never really set. You know, is there any upside here for Wisconsin? Did you learn anything about Wisconsin's lakes that could be rightly claimed over Minnesota?
Well, you know, we are PolitiFact Wisconsin overall. So, you know, we kind of had to search around for the facts that fit us best in this particular case. And, you know, it's a fun topic. So we did find a couple categories where Wisconsin comes out ahead. If you look for the deepest lake, we do take that one. We have Green Lake in central Wisconsin, comes in at about 230 feet, 20-odd feet deeper than Minnesota's deepest lake, and surface area covered by water. We win if we get to count Lake Michigan. Obviously, we've got kind of the 800-pound gorilla off to the east there. So we'd have about 17% of our state covered by water, counting that, compared to 8% for Minnesota. If we take out the Great Lakes, Minnesota's back to being about double where we are at for surface area, though, as well.
Who gets to have Lake Superior on their team?
So Minnesota does get to count that, but it's such a small corner of the state compared to the amount of Lake Michigan that we get to claim that doesn't help them too much.
So, Eric, do you think that this research, your research here, settles this? Do you feel settled in any way? Do Wisconsinites, do you think that they're okay with this?
You know, I couldn't help but notice that this did get a tweet from the governor that kind of did the old, well, okay, so maybe this was false, but, and went on. So it's kind of the sideways admission that, okay, maybe we need to give this one to Minnesota. So, you know, I figure that's as good as anything. But hopefully it at least lets people find some of the numbers behind it, as opposed to letting each state kind of pick their own numbers and pick their own standard. You can at least see where the nerdy details are at.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Eric Litke is a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin, and you have a link to his article at WPR.org over on the morning show page. Coming up, we talk with an elementary school teacher about how they approached their gender identity with students and made a teachable moment out of being transgender. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about non-binary teachers' approach to explaining their gender identity with their school community. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. 6 weeks ago, a science elementary school teacher in Madison shared this personal video about being transgender And they shared it with all their students in the school. And in the video, they read the book, They Call Me Mix, which is geared toward lower elementary grade readers. And soon after the video, a law firm that focuses on religious freedom sent an open records request to the district to find out if it had violated district policies and the Constitution by showing this video. Here's a bit.
You've known me as the person in the science room, as the person with the plants and the animals, as the person who builds and helps you build. Most of what you know is true. Most of what you know won't change.
Vika Steele, or Mix Steele, as the students now call them, is that voice you just heard. Vika, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Oh, what a beautiful day it is.
How did you get here? What led you to open up this way to your community, your students?
Well, for years I hid my truth. I made the decision to not let people know who I was. And it's only this year, only in February, that I knew I couldn't be that person anymore. I couldn't give in to the fear and the hate that's out there in the world because that's not who I am. So I came out first to my school leadership, then to our staff. And each step of the way, well, actually, I first came out with my wife, who embraced me with love right away and led me to help move forward. But each step of the way, I was afraid of how people would respond. Each step of the way, people responded with love and welcome. And I knew I had to talk to my students about this. I knew I needed to tell them my truth. It wasn't a question of if. It was a question of when. Go ahead.
Why did you decide at that point that, you know, in May, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this through a video?
Yeah. So we had a lot of talks with the team. This wasn't my decision alone. I mean, ultimately, it was my decision, right, to tell my truth. But I had the support, again, from our school leadership all the way up to the administration levels at the top levels. I looked at our kids. I could have waited till fall. I could have waited till summer to start. But I looked at our kids, and the truth that's out there that kept me from identifying from being who I really am for decades, that's still out there. That hate and fear is still out there. Kids at our school would throw love around like a slur. They would use gay. They would use homophobic words. I watched kids who were bright, shining stars year after year pull deeper into their hoodies, fall back into hiding in corners, getting quieter and quieter. And I knew that if anything I can do can help any of these kids leave hate, step forward into the light, then I need to do it. And so I did.
So the students and teachers at the elementary school, they watch your 8-minute mm-hmm. video in class, and you explain your new identity, Mix mm-hmm. Steele, and you also share what transgender means, and you incorporate a book into this conversation.
Yes.
Tell us about your approach to this video.
That's, you know, I was thinking of terms of, it's not my new identity. It is my identity. And I want kids to know that. But I also want them to understand that I'm not changing in most ways they know me. I'm still going to teach you how to use a saw and build in wood. I'm still going to get out the leopard gecko or the snake. We're still going to build that big aviary. We're going to get a tortoise. You're going to be in this room, and we're going to be learners, and we're going to be adventurers. And the only difference is I'm not lying to you anymore. I'm not lying about who I am anymore. And I'm being me, and you can accept that. And you know what? They did. Mm-hmm. Homophobic slurs plummeted after I came out. One of our boys, who was the worst at yelling gay as a hate word, came to me that day and said, Mix Steele, I didn't know. We love you. You're an amazing teacher. And he thought my name sounded like a superhero name.
I think the point that, you know, there's this really poignant moment in the video where you say, if you forget my name and mm-hmm. call me by my old name, it's okay. I forgive you. And I'm paraphrasing there.
Right.
Why did you add that?
Because it's going to be hard to adjust to a change. And that's anywhere. My wife changed her name from her birth name to Stella. I started going by my middle name years ago, and people have a hard time adjusting to that. And you get it. This is a bigger change. people adjust, but it takes time. And kids are really good at understanding how to be corrected. They say, Mr. B, I say mixed deal. They say mixed deal. Done. There's no hand-wringing, oh, no, I got it wrong. It's like, no, we just move on.
We're talking with Vika Steele, an elementary school science teacher in Madison who recently came out as transgender and non-binary, explaining to the school community this through a personal video. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you identify as transgender? When did you come out? How did you come out to your place of work? And how did your colleagues respond? Join in the conversation. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So how did teachers respond after they watched your video, after students watched it?
So I didn't share a video with the teachers. When I came out to the teachers, we were in a staff meeting and I just told them my story. My principal had set it up for me to be able to tell my beautiful story, is the way she had phrased it, and our assistant principal. And I had to read a letter. I couldn't say it without crying. And I'm starting to cry again because of that moment. People welcomed me. They hugged me. They cheered for me. And again, I've been embraced with love and warmth. The only hate and fear I've seen is people who are outside of us. They're not us.
A law firm focusing on religious freedom mm-hmm. issues. The Liberty Council sent this open records request
right.
soon after, saying that the district had appears to violate several district policies. How do you respond to this feedback about what you shared about your identity with students and the legal aspect of it?
There is no legal aspect. I'm not sharing anything except my identity. You walk into a room and you say, I'm a woman. Nobody's going to put you down for that. Nobody's going to say you can't be your identity, right? I'm my identity. This is who I am. This is not sex ed. This is identity. It's my truth. And that's the way the school sees it. Madison schools are welcoming schools. LGBTQ+, we welcome everybody in our schools.
What do policies like this mean for being inclusive and having these inclusive conversations in the schools?
The policy is a good start. You know, we are welcoming schools. This is a good policy. The issue is always in implementation. Does every school implement it well? When those kids are starting to hear that hate and that fear that's causing them to pull back, are the teachers in that school standing up and saying, that's not who we are. We welcome all.
Was there communication with parents about the video?
Afterward, yes. But this is, I don't need, like on the WPR website, I noticed it said that school district allowed me to present my identity. Nobody allows me to be myself. There is no permission needed to allow me to tell who I am. Now, are there ways to handle things that are different? I don't know. That wasn't my decision. That is an administration-level decision, and I feel they're right. You don't get to pull people out of a class of a transgender teacher because you don't agree with who they are. I'm still the teacher.
The relationships between students and teachers have evolved mm-hmm. over the years. Do you think sharing your experience will change your relationship at all with students? In what way?
I think it's made it stronger because I've watched kids, again, welcome me, just like the staff did, just like leadership did. They've come, they keep coming to my classroom. My classroom, by the way, I'm not so much a science teacher as science enrichment. The space I've built is 6 biomes. It's full of animals and plants. Mm-hmm. It's very hands-on. That room is open at breakfast. At lunch, I give extra time. That room fills before I came out. That room filled after I came out with kids loving that space and loving everything about it.
How do you feel today?
I still feel a little nervous, but I feel good. You know, I walked in here prepared for possibly giving the worst interview ever, doing, you know, noncommittal grunts and whatever it might be, and staring into space a long time. But I knew that even if that's the way I had responded that day out there, it's still a beautiful day.
What would you tell to others who are in this situation, who want to come out as transgender, don't know how to do it, and are hurting inside?
Yeah. I can't really feel like I can tell anybody anything,
mm-hmm.
but I can share who I am and what I did, and hopefully that helps them in some way.
Well, Vika Steele, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You are a delight.
Vika Steele is an elementary school science teacher in Madison, recently came out as transgender. And Sarah Cutler, by the way, the principal of Frank Alice Elementary, provided a statement to us in an excerpt. Frank Alice is a welcoming school, and we are proud to openly support our science teacher, Mix Vika Steele. Public schools have the responsibility to teach students how to become caring, inclusive, welcoming members of our communities. We believe that teaching about gender diversity is essential to creating gender-inclusive schools free of bias and bullying. The Madison Metropolitan School District also provided a statement. You can see both of those on our website at WPR.org on the morning show page. Stay with us. This conversation continues right here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about one teacher's approach to coming out as transgender and how they explained it to their elementary school in Madison. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. During the 8-minute video, Vika Steele read parts of the book They Call Me Mix, which is geared toward lower elementary grades. And Vika explains how this book accurately reflects Vika's own journey. Here's a moment from the video.
There is one truth that I've hidden from you. Until about a month ago, from my fellow teachers, from friends, from family, I am transgender. Maybe you know what that means. Maybe you don't. Maybe you've only heard those words through the filter of those who hate and fear.
Do you identify as transgender? When did you come out? How did it go? And how was it received by your own community? Educators, what do you do at your school to create supportive and inclusive environments for students and teachers? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah D. Sparks is with Education Week. Sarah is an assistant editor covering education research, and her blog is called Inside School Research. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Good to be here.
So decades ago, a Wisconsin teacher coming out as transgender to students wasn't something that happened very often. Vika Steele joined us earlier and talked about that experience coming out to students, one example of how teacher-student relationships are evolving. So what do we credit with this change over time?
Well, we certainly see an increased focus from schools and teachers on teachers becoming more meaningfully connected to their students. It used to be that teachers were seen as kind of removed and remote, and they would ask students to do something but not really focus on why they were being asked or any kind of connection between what they were being asked to do and what the teacher thought about it or what the student thought about it. And over time, they found that having those meaningful connections to their teacher and to what they're learning helps students learn.
In what way? How is it helping students learn?
Oh, there have been so many studies. Most recently, there was an analysis of nearly 50 studies that were looking at strong teacher-student relationships, and they are associated in practically every measure we care about. Students are more academically engaged, they come to school more often, they have fewer disruptive behaviors, they get suspended less, they're even dropping out of school less. In fact, the Centers for Disease Control tracked teenagers over about 20 years, and they found that the ones who had been strongly connected, felt strongly connected to their school as well as their family when they were young teenagers, 20 years later, they had better outcomes. They had lower risk of drug abuse and risky sex. I mean, the sort of strong role model and strong connection that kids feel to their teachers, particularly throughout school and in their teenage years really has a long-term effect on their academic achievement, but also their social lives and achievement.
Oh, so it has a ripple effect, is what I'm hearing, is that it touches so many other parts of life and they carry it with them for many years.
Definitely. And there have been studies that look at how students feel when they see another teacher, either a teacher who is like them, as perhaps any student who felt either they were trans or they had other gender identities. They look for teachers and other adult role models who can show them that's okay. But we've seen it in much more broadly. Students who are of lower socioeconomic status or who are of different races can look to see that they have teachers who are either like them or who are expressing respect for them as human beings. That really helps them feel comfortable in themselves and feel better able to perform in school.
So paint a picture for us, if you will. What does a positive relationship between a teacher and a student look like today?
You know, I love what the Berkeley professor, Jason Akonofua, he calls it a basic recognition of your humanity. So there are some really basic things like remembering a student's name and how to pronounce it correctly, particularly if they have a name that some folks might call difficult to pronounce, like Akonofua, for that matter. Mm. Not speaking down to students or embarrassing them in front of their peers, expressing interest in their perspective, not just like, oh, are you interested in baseball, but really wanting to understand how students' minds think. There have been studies that find college and middle-aged student and middle school-aged students across the board, they lose respect for teachers who treat students in a dismissive or punitive way, and they would be more likely to misbehave in that kind of teacher's class. So these are the kind of things that one expects teachers get taught in, in elementary school, respect other people, take interest in other people. But it can sometimes be really difficult when teachers are very stressed out, teachers are in a high pressure situation.
We're talking with Sarah D. Sparks, an assistant editor at Education Week, covering education research. We're looking at teacher-student relationships, especially in the context of gender identity and conveying personal circumstances to students. Students, how would you describe the relationship you have with your teachers? Do you feel they understand you as a person, or do you find it difficult to relate? Do you feel there is a trust there, a trusting relationship with teachers that allows for an ability to talk about experiences like gender identity? What do you think about coming out in a video to students? Join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah, developing a positive student relationship can take time. How should teachers approach this, especially when they have a lot of students in the classroom and they have a whole new group at the same time?
So there was a really striking study back in 2018. They looked at how teachers are trained to work with students, and it fell into two basic approaches. One was really transactional. You're trying to pull out little bits of information about a student, kind of surface level, specifically to get them to behave well or to do the work that you're giving them. And the other approach is much more of a give and take. You want to understand the student. You want to let the student know that you guys are grappling with the content material together and are discussing it together. And that doesn't necessarily require you taking 5 minutes per student to discuss a particular content issue. It means that your approach is more of a give and take with all of your students. And unfortunately, one of the really sad things that study found was that teachers that were trained in that very transactional approach often ended up working in very low-income and high-minority schools. And teachers who were trained in that more give-and-take approach ended up in schools that were with higher-income and white students. And so there was this sense that whether it was because their training or the pressures that are involved in a more high-need school, but teachers were having difficulty understanding to step back and look at these students as whole people and try to understand them in that way.
Well, let's take a call now. Don is joining us from Madison. Hi, Don.
Hi.
What are your thoughts here?
I guess I have a question. When you're talking about the study, you know, having all the effects positive down, you know, 20 years down the road, less risky sex, better social life, yada, yada. How long have these studies actually been going on? In regards to specifically trans or gender community, that we know 20 years on, this is the extrapolated results or positive outcomes.
Don, thanks for the call. You know, what are the underlying mechanics of these studies, and how long have they been going on?
Sure. So, to clarify, the Centers for Disease Control, they were looking at teenagers. Full stop. They were not looking at specifically LGBTQ or trans teenagers or teenagers of particular teachers. They were looking at the strength of the connection and relationship that students felt with their school and with their family members and tracking the effects of that over time.
So a very specific group.
Right. And similarly, a lot of the research that I was talking about have been about teacher-student relationships and teacher-student engagement, not necessarily specific to students who are non-binary or teachers who are non-binary or trans teachers or students.
Well, let's pause right here, Sarah. Sarah D. Sparks stays with us. Teachers, how do you develop positive relationships with your students? What do you find works, and how do you set boundaries? How do you work with students who might not see you or accept you as you are? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. On a Thursday, you're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the student-teacher relationship. What was the best relationship you've had with an educator or with a student? How did it change your life? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah D. Sparks of Education Week stays with us. Sarah, like all relationships, there are boundaries between students and teachers. So where do we draw the line on what is a healthy relationship?
I know that this is something that teachers and principals get very worried about, particularly with the rise of social media. And teachers have Facebook pages, too. They might have Twitter accounts. They might be on many of the same social networks that kids are on. And a lot of schools actually have rules and regulations around keeping those boundaries. But really, it seems like the key things are making sure that students are aware of boundaries. For example, some teachers recommend that they don't necessarily give their cell phone number out to their students, even though elementary student teachers often give their cell phone number out to parents. But there are, you want to model the behavior that you want the student to use. So if the teacher is connecting in a respectful way and in a way that's interested in the student but not being overly friendly, then the student is also learning how to have professional, cordial relationships with people as they get older.
About 3/4 of teachers in public and private elementary and high schools are women, and this means male students may find difficulty relating, perhaps, to their female teachers to develop that positive relationship, the role modeling. What is your take on this? Do you agree?
Well, any teacher can connect to a student, but it's certainly more difficult, and there have been studies about differences in how teachers connect to students when they come from different backgrounds or are different genders. For example, there was one study that looked at how teacher-student mismatches affect. So, for example, a white young female teacher interacting with a black adolescent boy. And they did find that sometimes those teachers expected less of their students or were less likely to believe that those students would go on and succeed. And that certainly doesn't mean that all teachers would do that. But it does mean that teachers have to be aware of how they're thinking about students and have to try to make sure those students feel respected. Because certainly there are studies that find students who feel respected and who feel that they, as boys or as trans students or as just a new student coming in, are respected and appreciated, they are much more resilient to stress in school and out of school.
You know, Sarah, we reached out to you as we had this conversation about an elementary school teacher coming out as transgender at their school in Madison. What are you seeing about gender identity as you look at schools across the country?
It's interesting. When I first was contacted, I thought you might be referring to a teacher in Denver, Colorado, who also recently came out, and it's now been, I think, about 4 years or so. And that teacher also went through a kind of transition period of letting their colleagues know and then their students know. And over time, that teacher has also seen some students have more difficulty with it, but a lot of students come to them with questions, and the teacher's been able to help reduce a lot of LGBT-related bullying in the school.
Oh, they become more of a resource in that school, a safe space.
Both a resource and because they are a role model in the school, other students may be less likely to see that as a problematic thing for a student to be.
You've said that teacher burnout is lower when there are better relationships between students and teachers. What can students and teachers do to help create a more positive environment in the classroom? What are those first steps?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. There was one study that found the best predictor of how much the teacher was experiencing joy versus anxiety in class was how good a relationship they had with their students. And I think there are some really basic ways. For example, teachers talking about differences in the class, talking about cultural differences between their background or the student's background, or helping the students talk about misunderstandings they have with something they thought their teacher did or a way they thought their teacher was responding to them and clearing up miscommunications. There was one really short program that they asked teachers to write comments on a student's essay slightly differently. So you might get a paper back and it's all covered with red ink, right? And that can be really frustrating. But when a teacher added some little comments like, I know you can write really well, and I am holding you to a higher standard in this paper because I really want to encourage that. The students took those critiques totally differently. They were more likely to go rewrite the paper. And those are the little tiny things that teachers can do on a daily basis that they may not think students take to heart, but they really do.
Sounds like teachers who say, I believe in you, and truly authentically do believe in their students, that can go a long way.
Absolutely. Kids understand when teachers are being sort of surface level and when they really care.
What is the role of administrators here and parents in helping these relationships evolve?
Well, the principal really sets the tone for the school. The principal will be the one helping the teachers interact with their students, but also mediating the parent side of it. We've definitely seen that when parents feel invited into the school, when they're respected by the front office staff, when they come in, they are more likely to feel comfortable coming to the school. They're more likely to feel comfortable talking to teachers, and particularly if they themselves had a bad experience in school as children, they may be less comfortable going into the school. But when the principal and the other staff and other adults in the building make an effort to make both adults and kids feel welcome coming into the building, that encourages just more trust between the families and the school.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sarah D. Sparks is an assistant editor at Education Week covering education research. Earlier, we talked with Vika Steele, an elementary school science teacher who came out to the school last month as transgender and non-binary through a personal video explaining their gender identity. We have links to statements by the Madison Metropolitan School District and the principal of Frank Alice Elementary School at WPR.org on the Morning Show page. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.